Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. We are broadcasting from Texas and from Florida, and we're having a great time, but we're going to let our great friend...
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to... I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell. He says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge. Dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic, a state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others, for all, which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Time, doesn't it, Dan?
Oh, of course. I mean, I can't listen to that enough. Red spoke so many great words of wisdom, you know, that I wish were carried out more today. You know, people don't realize it's everybody's, you know, it's all of our, all of us together that keep this country, you know, great, and people aren't exercising enough their say in our government. And,
that's right.
We're entering such a real exciting period of time. This is a time when we choose our candidates, and we have our primary and our secondary candidate. And if our primary candidate doesn't win, we can talk to our secondary and try to get our beliefs so they'll understand that this is what we expect of them. And it all begins right at the bottom. I mean, when we talk about God being the foundation of the nation, well, in our political system, this is the foundation. And if we don't make the right decisions here, we're going to be in real trouble later on. So this is really an exciting period on the local basis. These are the people we're going to be sending to Washington. These are the people we're going to be who are guiding our counties, our towns. So this, we can look at it as a difficult thing, or we can look at it as something exciting, because this is the time when the political voice of America speaks out. And
so very true.
This should be looked at as exciting instead of a burden.
It really should, and I'm glad that you said what you just said, because you gave me a great thing for the first thing that I want to bring up this morning. I'm excited. We are in Texas, and there is so much going on down here, Dan. I've done blog talk, I guess, for a little over 3 years now, and starting out with, of course, Kane Coast to Coast. Being a guest on Herman Cain in Wisconsin, a show by Dan and by Steve Williams and Bob Green and John Grooms up in Wisconsin, and went on their show one night and thought, we need a national show for this, and got together with them and we started Cain Coast to Coast. And John Grooms and Bob Green and Steve Williams and I did that for a while, and then that dreaded day in September came when Herman Cain said, I'm leaving the race, and we said, what do we do with the show? And I said, well, I think we just turn it to Conservatives Coast to Coast and keep going. We got a great thing going. And Steve and Bob up in Wisconsin and John up in Maine and I out in California. And then we had brought on Michael Smith from CNR Radio, from Conservative Nation Radio, down here in Dallas, Texas. And he was a host for a while. And then, of course, I got the Continue for Truth Radio Network not too long after that. We had been doing the Free Don Miller Show, and Steve and Bob went up to Orion Talk Radio, and I wanted to continue that. So I got a Continue for Truth Radio, and we started doing the Free Don Miller Show there that we'd been doing on the Underground Hard Drive and kept going. And I've enjoyed this. I've enjoyed this forum because I don't have to type. Dan, you and I can sit and we can blog, and that's what it is. It's blog talk. We're making a long blog. We're all included in it, but I don't have to type. And over those years out in California that I did all that, and while I was participating in campaigns, Dan Hughes down in San Diego and different campaigns across the country, Zach Poskovich in Tennessee and Don Chamberlain down in Alabama, as I did that, I always had this saying that I used. All my friends back east get all the fun, and all I get's this old Block Talk Radio. Because, in a primary, nothing comes out to California. By the time it comes, the primary race comes to California, everything is almost always decided. And California politics, we got a lot of squishy candidates out there. Now, this year, we don't. We got some really good candidates. We got some great candidates, in fact. But I've always said, all I got left is this blog talk. All I got is this blog talk radio, and all my friends back east get to have all the fun. But now, Dan, I'm smack dab in the middle of the state what I see right now from the grassroots is the most fun state in the whole country to be involved in politics, Texas politics. And I'm right here in the middle. I'm right here on the outskirts of Dallas. And I'm going to tell you, there are so many things going on, and I've been here a month now, and I haven't got to participate in anything. But I've got breaking news for you, Dan. I have got breaking news for Contending for Truth Radio. Is everybody ready for this? In fact, I think we better play some intro music onto this, because this is going to be awesome news, Dan. I was going to tell you about this in chat, and then I thought, no, I'm just going to wait and tell Dan about it when we get on the radio, because this is the most exciting thing. You're going to be excited. You're going to wish that you were up here, but we're going to give us a little bit of introductory music, and then I will give that information out. Saturday, 11 o'clock Texas time, 12 o'clock Florida time, 9 o'clock California time, Contending for Truth Radio and the Saturday Symposium with Dan Wilson is going to be broadcasting live. Live, folks, with Sid Miller. He's going to be at my side. I am going to get a chance to sit down and actually shake hands with a candidate instead of chatting with them on Facebook, calling them on the phone. There's been a lot of candidates I've gotten to work with. One candidate, Dan Hughes, down in California, when I helped on his campaign, did I get to meet and shake his hand. We're going to be broadcasting live next week, Dan, from the 2014 Tarrant County Candidate Fair. Connie Burton's going to be there, Stephanie Busby's going to be there, Ann Lieber's going to be there, Dwayne Stovall's going to be there. All of the candidates that we talk about on this show, with the exception, of course, of Rodney Conover, might have to get him to fly out here for that. But I'm going to tell you, Dan, it's going to be fun. I'm going to be sitting at the booth with Sid Miller, and he's going to be our main guest next week. We'll have him on for a time, and then we might just gather up some other candidates that are out there, and I'm going to be out in the middle of Texas Politics Central, where all the candidates come together and let everybody know where they stand and give you a chance to talk to them and meet them. And we'll be broadcasting live from on the road at the candidate forum. How is that for fun news, Dan Wilson?
Oh, that sounds fantastic. I mean, to have the candidates right there, and, you know, is something that we don't get to do very often, so I'm really looking forward to that. It'll be a lot of fun.
It is going to be a lot of fun. And let me tell you, I got a huge respect for Sid Miller. I've done a lot of Facebook posts. Sid's a rancher. Sid's running for the Agricultural Commissioner. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this show and on our Tuesday night show. Dan, go local, go local, go local. A lot of these races, like the commissioner's races and the supervisor's races, they don't get as much attention. You know, everybody knows who's running for president. Most people know who's running for the senator in their races. Even less people really sometimes know who their congressman is that's running. But when we come down to the school board, when we come down to the commissioner's races, when we come down to the supervisor's races, when we come down to some of these local races, people don't pay a whole lot of attention. A lot of times they don't even know what that job is. Of course, last Tuesday night, we had Dave Souza running for supervisor in El Dorado County. a small race, but an important race, because Dave's a great guy. He's a good, solid man. He's got good, solid basic principles. He also is a rancher. And we talked a lot about farm life and growing up on a farm and dealing with animals and the kind of character that it involves. So I'm really looking forward. Sid Miller has been one of the ones that's been at the top of my list to get on a show and to chat with and to help his campaign. We're looking forward to a victory party for Sid Miller in November. And I think we're going to see that happen. He's got some great things. But there's some other candidates down here in Texas, Dan, that are great candidates. Katarina Pearson, she's just wonderful. Connie Burton, man. You want to talk a little bit about Little Firehouse, and I'm going to tell you something about Connie. Connie's one of us, Dan. She's grassroots. Uh-huh. She's grassroots, and she is just grounded and firm. And let me tell you about her. She's running to fill the seat that's left by this Wendy girl, Wendy Davis, who thinks she's running for governor here in Texas. I don't think she's got a Chinaman's chance to win that race. She's a little bit nutty in the first place. One thing about these Texas Democrats down here, they're not far left. I've noticed that real quick. They're not on board with a lot of the things that the far left wants. And Wendy girl, that's what I call her, Wendy girl, reminds me of somebody that needs to go fly to Never Never Land, but she's made a mess of herself already. She's barely got into the campaign, but Connie Burton is running to replace her in that seat, and Connie's just awesome. Looking forward to visiting with Connie. We got Dan Patrick, Dwayne Stuvall, Greg Abbott out here in Texas running in some good races. Let me tell you, Greg Abbott is staunch and firm. Dwayne Stuvall is staunch and firm, and I'm going to meet all of them. I'm also, it'll be the first time since I've been down here in Texas, been wanting to do this, just haven't had the chance yet, to give my good friend Michael Smith with Conservative Nation Radio here on Blog Talk Radio a great big bear hug. Michael and I have been in the trenches since almost day one with Herman Cain together. He's a good friend, somebody that I really, really love and really, really care about. And let me tell you, he works very, very hard. He started out in Blog Talk about a week or two after I did, Dan, and he emailed me and he said, Scott, he said, I want you to help me get into Blog Talk. I want you to help me figure this thing out. And then he, within a few months, had turned his Blog Talk Radio into Conservative Nation Radio with a website and a group and a team and all kinds of shows. Man, Bing Fisher, Uncle Bing, has been on with him since almost day one. Doing different shows, the Women Patriots, Duke Brooks, just some great. Jay Craig was on there for a while. It's got Red Knuckle Politics. He took Blog Talk Radio, something that I've always kind of kept as a hobby. I'm a little bit less formal. We don't have a lot of commercial breaks and hard breaks, but man, he took that thing and turned it into a great, great set up, and so proud of him for that. I get to get over there. I'm going to see him that day also, give him a great big old bear hug, and so many other people that I've been visiting with on Facebook and chatting with. It's just going to be a great time, and we'll be broadcasting live from there next week at 10 o'clock. So we want to make sure if you're listening today, if you're listening right now live, or if you're listening in archive, don't miss it. It's going to be one of the most incredible Saturday symposium shows we've done. Dan, we might have you might have to get in the car and drive up here, my friend.
That would be great.
I know, huh? Oh, but we are. We're going to have a good time. And that, like we said last week, this is what this is going to be all about. We're going to talk to some great people, working on getting Connie Burton as a guest here pretty soon. We're going to have Sid Miller, and on our Tuesday shows as well, we've got some good people coming up. Moshe Starkman, who did a lot of the work for the websites and for the Team Cain and the other social media setups that Herman Cain had. He's going to be coming on on the 4th of February to talk with us about Centrix. We've got Dara Bailey coming on this next Tuesday night, Dan, with us from iCaucus. Jennifer Montrose set that up. And we're going to spend the year talking about these guys, because what you said a while ago is so true. This is the great time It is a great time. We've got better access to our candidates than we've ever had before. I can get a pop on there and be friends with Facebook in an instant. You know, I had an interesting situation last night, and I'd have to go back and look for her name. I have forgotten it already. I've got to put her on my list for Texas. But there was the president of the Tarrant County Tea Party was on Greta Van Susteren last night talking about all this IRS business. And I looked her up. Friended her, and within 5 minutes, I was friends on Facebook and chatting with her. And there's just all kinds of people down here, Dan. I'm having more fun than anybody can imagine, and I haven't even got to go out and do anything yet. But next week, we will do that. And it's important because we fight a lot of issues. And I'm a firm believer that the good days of this country are not over unless we sit down, and unless we don't move, unless we don't fight. But we're here to fight, and we're going to keep on keeping on. We're going to keep fighting until we get this done. And I'm a firm believer also that the left's dream of turning Texas blue, I don't think they've got a chance. In fact, I think they've done more damage by trying to do that than they have accomplished in even getting there, because people are not kowtowing to their insanity. You know, they're working hand-in-hand with Wendy Davis. They're doing some illegal stuff in the campaigning. They're doing some obnoxious thing. If you noticed a video running around that Larry Jones, the third, with Project Veritas got going, where they were making fun of our candidate, Greg Abbott, because he's in a wheelchair. And that's insanity. That's absolutely insanity. But that's why we do what we do each week. That's why Dan and I get together each Saturday and do this show, so we can talk to candidates, so we can give them get their information out, so we can give them a voice, so people can hear, so we can talk about the issues, so that you can call in. If anybody's out there and they want to join the conversation that Dan and I are going to have this morning, we would love for you to do that. You can call us at 347-205-9620. That's 345-205-9620. Call in and chat with us, because we're going to talk about some issues this morning. We're going to talk about some current events this morning. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things. And if you want to join the conversation, give us a call and join in, and we will bring you right in. And with that, you know, Dan, we always like to go back to the summer of 1787. And this last couple of weeks, I've been in homeschool. We've been starting American history, and we've been talking about the Mayflower and the trip that we took, that the Pilgrims took, the Pilgrims and the Strangers. There was two groups on that boat. There were a bunch of people that were really interested in exploring, and there were a bunch of people that were very interested in freedom of religion. And they got on that boat. And I've always known, I had a pretty good grasp on my early American history, but it was really great to read it again. Because what they went through and what they did was about keeping on, keeping on. Those guys, when they got on that boat, had no clue whether they were going to make it or not. They got on that boat. They were going to be out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean for two months. They were out there. It was wintertime. There was no engines on that boat. There were no life rafts on that boat. They did pull a little boat behind them that the purpose of it was for getting supplies back and forth in the New World, but there was no way all of them could fit on it. So they got out, and they got on that boat with a lot of faith. And they believed that if they got to the New World, if they got their freedom and they could worship the way they believed, instead of being worshiping the way the government was telling them to believe, if they could think the way they believed instead of the way the government was telling them to think, that they could create a new life. And so they did. They came over. They got on that boat. It was horrendous. There was sickness. It was cold. It was wet. It was damp. Of course, this is in the 1600s, so, you know, this was no Carnival Cruise Line. This was what we would probably look at today as an old clunker. But they got on it, and they had the team, and, you know, the sailors weren't always nice to them, of course. until that one sailor ended up dying, and then all of a sudden the sailors, the crew decided they better treat these pilgrims with a little bit more respect. But they got on that boat, and they got over here to the land, and then there was all kinds of hurdles that they had to jump over. You know, and as I'm teaching my girls about this, and as we're reading about the Mayflower and the pilgrims landing at what is now Plymouth, when they got off that boat, there was no Ralph's. There was no Albertsons. There was no Kroger. There was no electricity. There were no houses to rent. We just made a great trek halfway across the United States. And we came and we brought all our stuff, but when we got here, we had a key to a house, and we opened up the house, and it had lights, and it had running water, and within a couple of weeks, we had internet. And when we got hungry, we went down to the store, and when we needed gas, we went down to the gas station, and when we wanted to go out and eat, there was all kinds of restaurants to pick from. The pilgrims landed, there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. There were no houses. There were no roads. There was no access to food. Everything that they did, they had to do on their own. And they did. And they started working and they started building. You know, they put together that Mayflower Compact, which is, just as important as our Constitution in our early American history, because it set the tone for the Constitution, for freedom, and that they were going to stick together, that they were going to make sure that everybody was free, that they were going to make sure everybody was treated fairly, and that they were going to make sure that this great dream succeeded. And so they started chopping down timber. They started making their own nails. They started putting together houses, and they started putting together a little community. And it was rough because they showed up in the middle of winter, and it was cold. It was damp. It was snowy. And that's not real good when you're sick. You know, Dan, you've been sick here recently a little bit, and when it's cold, it makes it worse. A lot of those people showed up, and they were sick. And they didn't feel good. But they pursued, and they pursued, and they pursued. And half of them died. Half of them died the first year. But they kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And so why do I say all that? Why do I say all that? That's the beginning of our American history. And the beginning of our American history started out with hurdle jumpers. They didn't cry in front of their hurdles. They looked forward to their hurdles. And they have looked forward to jumping them because as they jumped them, they became strong. And now as I stand here and I walk out of the garage and I look around at this cute little neighborhood I live in, and I'm looking at the results. I'm looking at the results. I'm looking at our Jeep Laredo here, you know. Why do I bring up the Jeep Laredo? Because we wouldn't have this if it hadn't been for old Henry Ford. Henry Ford and his ability, his freedom to sit down and say, all right, we're going to make the car, but hey, I think we could probably make it more productive if I put it on an assembly line. And Eli Whitney and his cotton gin said, well, you know what? I think we could find a better way to do this, a more productive way to do this. And if we can get the prices down on the goods. And the Wright brothers, who had a dream of getting off the ground and going up into the air. I live right underneath the flight path from Dallas-Fort Worth. We're always hearing airplanes. We're always watching airplanes go over just not too far away from the top of the house. The Wright brothers. And you know, when I come out here at night, Dan, I flip on the light and the light bulb and Thomas Edison and the light bulb. He had the freedom to dream. He had the freedom to create. And right now I'm talking on the telephone. I'm talking on the telephone. Thomas Edison. And we've had a great history. We've had a great, absolutely a great history. Because people have had the freedom to dream. People have had the freedom to do. They haven't had a government that turned around and said, no, you can only do this, you can only do that. We don't have a caste system here. We got a system like Frederick Douglass, who started out a slave, born into slavery. At 6 years old, he lost his mom. His mom died. And he lived the American dream, though. He didn't let anything hold him back. He was able to jump out of that system. He was able to jump out of slavery throughout his life with hard work and perseverance. And by the time he died, he was in the top 1% of wealth in this country. He was able to do that. He was able to have the ear of presidents. He was able to do that because it's the American dream. And right now, we've got a bunch of people on one side of politics that want to squash that dream. And how they want to squash that dream is they want to make everything fair for everybody. And the only way you can make everything fair, as Evan Syett says it so well, go to my Facebook page and listen to his latest speech. as he says it so well, if you try and make everything fair, it doesn't make everything good. It makes everything bad. And that's the side of politics we're fighting. It's not that, Dan, you and I, we're both very, very compassionate people. We have compassion for people. We don't want to see people hungry. We don't want to see people without health care. We don't want to see people that have a poor education. But we also know that that system that they are trying to instill has been tried before. The system of trying to micromanage everything, to control everything, to make everything fair, never works. And everybody's setup falls apart. Our biggest example right now is Obamacare. We had, 30, 40 million people that didn't have health insurance, that maybe wanted health insurance. And instead of just finding a way to help get those people some insurance, what did they do? They had to tear up the whole setup. Because it wasn't about getting those people insurance. It was about controlling everybody else's life and making everything fair and giving everybody the same thing. So now everybody's fair, all right. A whole lot of people have lost their health insurance, and now we have more people that don't have health insurance than we did when we started, because that's the way that system works. And so, Dan, as we talked this morning, and you and I both love to reflect on American history, and we see the very basic startings of our great country were started on the concept of jumping hurdles and the freedom to jump your hurdles and the freedom to make mistakes and the freedom to fall down, because we know that it's when you fall down, it's when you get stronger at getting up. You can't get stronger at getting up if you never fall down. We're fighting another side. And they're really, really playing by an ends justify the means mentality. They're willing to lie, cheat, use deceit, bribe, steal, any way possible in order for them so that they can win, because they want to make everything fair. Well, Dan, I'm going to pass it to you with, life isn't meant to be fair. Life was meant for us to deal with what comes to us in the best way possible. I'll pass it to you for your remarks.
No, I agree with you. And, you know, you start off with the Mayflower. Anybody who's ever visited Plymouth, they have a replica of the Mayflower. She was 65 feet overall length with three decks, where they basically loaded people on like cordwood. People did not have the room. They lost, I think, 15 people on the trip there to the New World, and basically they just tossed them overboard. Food was partially contaminated. It wasn't a real pretty ride. And when they ran out of beer, which they considered a food back then, is when they decided that they had to find a place to land, and this is when they landed in Plymouth. It was when they landed, it was too late in the year to start a crop, so they had nothing. And what they did is they turned to the Native Americans, who gave them help, and that's why the following fall, they invited the Native Americans who had helped them all that first year. And they had a Thanksgiving dinner, which is a little different than what we would, you know, consider today. But that's how the nation began, the very, very first year. And, yes, we did lose half of our half of the people from starvation, illness, and a bunch of other problems. And once we got our foot settled, and we settled the Massachusetts Bay colonies, we went from there, and we started making the same mistakes that they were making over in England. Instead of having the Church of England, the Puritans at that time had the majority, and the majority at that point started acting exactly like the Church of England. And one theologian and minister by the name of Roger Williams stood up and said, "No, I want to practice my religion here." And the Puritan said, "You have two choices, leave or die." And him and his followers moved 80 miles south of the Massachusetts Bay Colony and formed Providence Plantations. And that was the beginning of the separation between church and state. And we have people later on in the history of this nation who wanted to take that and twist it around, saying the separation of church and state meant something entirely different. Well, if we look at the readings of Roger Williams, the two case studies that he was giving was the Church of England and what was going on in Massachusetts Bay Colony. It was not in any way construed that it was get rid of God. It was saying that we should have the freedom to choose how we worship God, not the removal of God. And this is what one of the problems was of the that was later misinterpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court in the 60s. And we run into, see, back then, one thing, we were a fledgling nation with different ideals and differences, you know, many, many differences. Yet, one thing we did know is that we were forming a nation that we wanted true freedom from not only religion, but from every aspect. And we had to come up with a lot of a lot of give and take, and it was difficult. And then we, you know, we got to the 200 years later, after this nation had formed 13 solid colonies up and down the East Coast, we came to a point where we decided, because of unfair taxes, we decided that we need to be a nation within ourselves. And so in 1776, we wrote the Declaration of Independence. And we understood that the Constitution that we had originally written with nothing but something that's going to hold us over until we could write a better one. So in the summer of 1787 was when Congress decided it was time to come up with a better Constitution. Excuse me. So in 1787, in the summer of 1787, members from all 13 colonies got together, and it was a hot summer. And these poor men sweated through in that small room, as you said, and they toiled. And, you know, for the first month, they couldn't get anything done. Until the eldest member of Continental Congress, Benjamin Franklin, finally stood up and said, you know, When we were in the middle of the Revolutionary War, we prayed before every meeting of Continental Congress. He said, don't you think it would be a good idea to do the same thing? And what he did is every day he had a different member of a different church lead a prayer so that all religions were covered. And that was the beginning of how we eventually came to the consensus of our Constitution. And after that, as you said, we went into the Industrial Age, and this country grew. It didn't grow by the government. It grew by individual people with dreams. As you said, you mentioned Thomas Edison, Henry Ford. These were all men of dreams. You know, they didn't start out with, a lot of them did not start out with wealth. The Rockefellers, for instance, made their money in the railroads. We had Henry Flagler and Plant, who settled Florida. And these people, these men of wealth that the liberals like to attack were the ones who created this nation. And the one thing that people believed in was that it was their obligation to get out and make sure that their representatives were the ones they wanted to go to state legislation and federal legislation. So the people, it was we the people who went out there and made sure that they had the proper representation. Because they knew from stories about how it was back in England, and they weren't old enough, many of them, to know what took place back there, but they knew that England did not have it right, so they took this new constitution, this new concept, very, very seriously. So when it came time to vote this time of year, they were all at the town hall meetings, making sure that the people they wanted to represent them were there. And this is why we had very, very good candidates on both sides, because they took the time and the effort to learn what people they wanted to represent them. And this continued on for better than 100 years. During even the Civil War, the reason why the Civil War took place is that both sides were exercising their constitutional rights. And this is the beauty of the Constitution. The South disagreed with the North on how this country should be ran. They believed that slavery was one thing that should have been kept. And the North said, no, this is not the way it's to go. And this is when we had the separation of the Union. And we were lucky enough at that time to have the first member of the Republican Party to serve as president, Abraham Lincoln, who was an open-minded person though he didn't necessarily agree that African Americans or blacks were on the same intellectual level, he did believe in their freedom. And he fought for that freedom until he met a person by the name of Frederick Douglass. And Frederick Douglass really opened Lincoln's eyes as to the intelligence of the African Americans. And he saw that they should have all the freedoms that that the whites enjoyed. And the Emancipation Proclamation came out of that. And the nation, had Lincoln not been assassinated, the nation would have been actually a lot closer at the end of, after the Civil War. It was, Booth who really messed that program up. But anyway, every time we've had a problem like that, we've managed to overcome that because of our constitutional rights enabled us to. We had congressmen and we had senators that truly represented each and every state. And on the state level, each and every county was well represented. And therefore, the people's word was heard. And that carried on through the 60s. But then, we got lazy in the 30s during the FDR years, because they believed in the propaganda that was being sent out. And after that, but after FDR died and Truman took over, we sort of got back into the right frame of mind. But as the years passed through the 60s, there became some loss in the belief in our system. And it was, I think, in part due to the UN and our belief in trying to get a single world government. And that's where we made our big mistake. And then it just continued to get worse. We had our Carter years where we found that the socialistic way was not the way to go. And a brilliant man by the name of Ronald Reagan came along who understood that his cabinet needed to be consist of people who were brilliant in their own fields. And thank God he picked Art Laffer as his economic advisor. And Laffer was the one who let us out of this recession and came up with a plan to get us out of this. Although Reagan still believed in a larger government than I would have preferred, in every other aspect, he brought back the conservative belief, which was carried on reasonably well by President Bush the first. And then along comes Clinton, who wants this equality everybody should own a house, and tried to push this ideal. And in doing so, he changed many of our banking laws. And this set up the groundwork for what happened in 06. You know, the total collapse of the economy. And since then, this president has done everything he can to destroy this nation. And I don't say that lightly, but when a man goes out and opens up the borders and sends weapons to the enemy, adds EPA restraints that are so outrageous that companies cannot even meet them, and goes out and also breaks so many constitutional laws and ignores it, thinks he's above the Constitution. This is the problems we're running into today. And how did we get here? Complacency. Too many people on the side of the conservatives didn't really watch what was going on. And it also happened well on the Democratic side as well. And it was actually a very, very small percentage of people that led us into this mess. And people on both sides today are upset. And this is why I keep on saying, no matter what your beliefs are, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, there's a few basics that we need to apply. And the first thing is a belief in God. And for God is the cornerstone of this nation, and it has been since day one. The second thing is a belief in the Constitution. The Constitution is what gives us the rights that we enjoy today. And the third part is love of country. And when you put the three together, and I say that these are the three concepts that we need to ask every candidate, whether you're Democratic or Republican, these are the three basic concepts every candidate needs to have. And then, as I said, the rest of the particulars can be figured out later. But if a candidate comes into this race this year who doesn't have those three basic beliefs, this nation's doomed. Because right now we're going towards a socialistic society. And once you reach a socialistic society, the next step is a communist dictatorship. And what does that mean? Total loss of our constitutional rights. And right now we're battling for our constitutional rights. And the only way we can get back to them is to go back to these three basic principles that have been here for over 300 years. If we do not get back to this, then we're doomed. And this year, this is why I wrote in my blog 3 days ago that if we don't get out there and just get to know our local candidates, this is a time we have to do it. And then you could actually find that by doing so, you're going to enjoy yourself. Because then all of a sudden you feel part of the system. See, what happened is people got lazy and they stopped going to the town hall meetings. And when they stopped going to the town hall meetings, they felt less of being part of the system. And then they got to this ideal that, what does my vote matter? Well, your vote matters a lot because it begins right next door to you. And this is what people don't understand. You see, if I can say that, you know, Fred Smith, who I originally voted for here in Pasco County, is now running for president, that was part of my vote that got him there. And I can take, you know, a little pride in that. And each and every, each of us do that. Take that little bit and then say, listen, I had a part in getting this person into it. Because it did start out as a very small thing where, you know, some of these townies have maybe 1,000 people. One vote means a lot. And you can't think of it on a national basis, but you got to think of it on your local basis. Because remember, the first step that these people take is when they're running for city council, school board, you know, the basics. And then the next step they go is into state Congress, state Senate. And then the third step is on a national basis. So we aren't that far removed from the people in Washington. And as long as we put the time in and put the right people on the starting block, by the time they get to Washington, they're ready to represent us in a manner we can feel proud of, and we can say that, yes, this is what we want for our country. And with that, I'll put it, pass it back.
Well, exactly, Dan. And you gave a great rundown of a lot of history. And, man, I always love it when we go back to the summer of 1787. Because those men realized exactly what you just said. In fact, that could have been a lot of what you just said could have been said on the floor of that the closed in room there in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. You know, as you learn about what happened in that room over those few months, one of the things that we know was that George Washington didn't say much. He sat back and he listened. And then at the end, he spoke up. And you know, I like to read between the lines. I mean, if you listen to Friday, if you listen to our ladies' Bible classes, we're reading through the history. I like to do this a lot in Bible history. Read between the lines a little bit and try and imagine what the person was thinking at the time, what the person was thinking, feeling at the time, what the person saw. And as I've stopped over the years and thought about George Washington as he sat those months, just patiently listening, was that he couldn't have helped but to have thought of the future of this great country and the American dream and what it was going to mean. And of course, he had no clue as to what technology was really even going to be. Of course, they knew what technology was. They had some technology. those pilgrims had come over on a piece of technology, that big boat with the sails and the rudder. They learned how to make some nice houses and different things, but he had no clue as to what technological advances we would face. But I am sure he knew his history.
And he knew, like you referred to, that different times and in different ways, people had tried different things, and they didn't work. They didn't work. And a lot of times the things that we try that didn't work have been tried before, and we know they didn't work. And socialism is just one of those things. Trying to make everything fair, trying to spread everything around so nobody's got more than anything else has never worked. What you always end up with is you always end up with poverty, and you always end up with a small group of people at the top that have all got all the money, all of the power, all of the control. That is where it leads to. When you take the opposite of that, and that's what they were looking for in that summer of 1787, was going in a different direction of that. You always end up with freedom. And there's only two ways to go at it. When you give it the government, when you give the government all kinds of power, that was the whole purpose of the Constitution, was to limit government's power, was to limit the government of that federal government. And that's why they designed it to where here's the rights of the federal government and everything else is left up to the states. Because they knew those men on both sides of the aisle, and there was arguments and debate, and there were some issues of the day. How do they deal with the slavery? How do they deal with the big states and the small states and the different populations that were in each one, and make sure that there's a balance of power so that the big states don't control everything, and the little states are just out to lunch. But they all wanted to preserve freedom, and they all knew that in times past, there were times when man did not have freedom. They all knew that in times past, that there were times when man was persecuted because a few at the top had unending power. And, you know, you can take the best of the best person and give them total control, and it's not good for their character. We will watch them go downhill. You know, we talk about a lot of good candidates on here, Dan. Rodney Conover, man, I've gotten to know him. I'm going to bring him up. Because he's solid. He's solid where he stands. Now, I agree with him on the issues. He's solid on what I believe on abortion and on taxes and on immigration and on these different things. But that's not why I like Rodney. I like Rodney because he's solid in his core. He's solid in his stance. He's not going to be moved. But we've got some candidates, we've got some politicians out there who have not been that way, who when they got up to a certain level of power, when they got up to a certain level of income, when they got into a certain level of playing politics, they started waffling on their decisions, and they make their decisions based on money, and they make their decisions based on influence. Instead of standing for what they believe in. John McCain, excellent example. Your wonderful governor down there, Rick Scott, wonderful example of that. And my two favorite, and I say that sarcastically, favorite senators we've got, Lamar Alexander and Bob Cork the Dork Corker in Tennessee. Both men that you can look at their records, you can look at their history, you can see where they started out, you can see where they're at now, and you can see that they're just talking heads. Because they've let the influence of fame and power and control and money influence their decision-making process. Well, we could say probably a lot about every single one of those men that were gathered there in the summer of 1787, but I have not seen anything that yet, to my knowledge, that those men weren't solid in what they believed, solid in what they said, even if they disagreed, and there were some that I would have disagreed with had I been in the room. But their character was solid. We've got a man in the White House right now whose character isn't solid. You know, he came out against gay marriage, and I agree with him. I don't believe in redefining the definition of marriage. I believe that everybody should have the freedom to live as they want in this country, whether I agree with their moral choice or not. I have no problem with that whatsoever. However, marriage is something that was designed for a long time ago by God as between a man and a woman. And I believe that we should make sure that everybody that's living in this country, if they are in a committed relationship, should have the rights to take care of each other, whether it be in a just a living together situation or two men or two women. In fact, my sister and I having a discussion about this a couple of weeks ago. She says, "Man, it needs to be set up to where I can have the same protections with you, my brother. We're living together in a family, and you're my right hand." And she says, "You're my brother, but we need to have some kind of protections so that if something happens to me, you can take care of the situation." So I agree with all of that, but I don't agree that we should change what marriage is defined as. But you see, folks, we're heading in another direction. We're heading in another direction. And we're heading into a direction where character doesn't matter. You see, I have a problem with the president's character. I think he should have come out in the first place and said, "I'm for gay marriage." I would have disagreed with him. I would have disagreed with him 100%, but I would have intellectually respected him for standing up for what he believed in instead of lying to his constituents, lying to the American people, and saying, "I believe one thing," so he could get votes, and then turning around and not believing what he said. I have no problem with the President of the United States believing wholeheartedly that a socialist situation is the best. I have no problem. This is America. You got the freedom to believe what you believe. I disagree wholeheartedly with it. Wholeheartedly. But where I've got the problem with this president is he won't stand up there and say that. He won't stand up there and say what he believes. He plays politics. He plays politics because he knows if he stood up there and said exactly what he believes, he would have never been elected. John McCain, man, I have such a high respect for the man that spent his time in service for this country. And I have a high respect for John McCain as a hurdle jumper. I really do. You know, you don't go spend 5 years in a POW camp, especially when your father is involved in government and they know it. I'm sure the abuse was more because of that. And come out of it and not spend the rest of your life wallowing in your pity. And he's never done that. He came back. He jumped his hurdle. He made himself stronger. He's never let it slow him down. He's never one that's been sit around and cry and complain about all the things that happened to him in Vietnam and why, because of that, he can't do anything in life. I've got huge respect for him for that. However, I have no respect for him in where he stands in his solid positions. He's not a maverick. They call him a maverick. He's not a maverick. He's not a maverick. He's a person who goes wishy-washy depending on who he's talking to. He's a person that goes wishy-washy depending on the power and the control and whatever the situation is at hand. If I firmly believed he believed everything he said, I'd have respect for him, but I don't have respect for him as a politician because I know he doesn't believe everything he says he believes. And, I'll tell you, Dan, why he didn't stand up in that first debate against President Obama and look at him and say, "Change what? Change? Change you can believe in? Change what? This is the greatest country this world has ever seen. Have we made mistakes? Yes, we've made mistakes. Have we had errors in our history? What nation hasn't? The best and the worst have. But look at all the wonderful things that we've done, and look at the freedom that we have spread, and look at the standard of living we have, and look at the fact that our poorest of poor are in the top 10% of the wealth of the world. Even our poorest of poor have a great living situation. Let's go to Ethiopia. Let's go to Ghana. Let's go to South Africa. Let's go to Trinidad and look at what real poor people are. What do you mean change? Change what?" I've never understood why he didn't stand up and say that. Are the things that we need to continue to improve? Well, of course. Every nation, every family, every man has things as they go forward they need to change and fix and grow. It's always a growth process. But this country's great. There has been no greater. There has never been a country that has provided so much for so many. There has never been a country that has tried so hard to make sure that justice is right. That's why I was so hard on Judge Madden and D.A. Lipsky up in Hurley, Wisconsin over the Don Miller story, who is now free. Because the bulk of our judicial system has always been good and it's always been fair. And you've got the freedom in this country to be innocent until proven guilty. Very few nations have ever seen that. Many nations of this world, if the politicians or those in control want to throw you in jail, they walk over, pick you up, and throw you in jail, and you have no recourse. We don't have that in this great country, although we are heading towards that, I'm afraid. We don't stand up and fight. This is a great country. This is a great country, and we've got some great politicians on both sides of the aisle. There are some politicians that I have some huge respect for that I totally disagree with. I got huge respect for Dianne Feinstein in California as an individual. I don't agree with her on about 85% of what she says, although I will say when it comes to foreign policy, she's a pretty good hawk. And boy, when some of this NSA stuff, she stood up and gotten pretty harsh. And there are times when on her own side or making mistakes, she stands up and says, no, I don't like this. And I respect that out of her. Even though I don't agree with her, even though I think when it comes to her politics and the positions that she takes and the side of the aisle she stands on, I think she's a loon when it comes to that. But as a character of an individual, she says what she believes what she says, and she stands up for what she believes, and she does not waffle based on money. She does not waffle based on other issues of the day. She stands up for what she believes in, and I've watched her over the years living in California grow from being very far left to being not so far left over the years. I've watched her mature. I disagree with her politics 100%. I do not agree with her 100%. Most of the time, I totally disagree with what she thinks. But I respect the fact that she stands for what she believes. And then we've got people on both sides of the aisle who are absolutely squishy, who absolutely will go with any wind that blows. And I'll tell you, Dan, I'd rather gather up all the Republicans on all the Democrats that are squishy on their beliefs and leave those on both sides of the aisle that believe what they believe opposite on the issues, but stand up for what they believe, and I believe we'd be in a better situation. A lot of times we get ourselves into this idea of the D and the R, and we just think automatically that all the Ds are the enemy. But no, it's not the Ds and the Rs that are the enemy. The people that won't stand up for what they believe in, the people that won't stand where they believe, those are the guys that are the enemy. Debate has always been a part of this great country. We've always had really two sides of the aisle, and it's what makes some of our politics fun. But, man, we got to get people in there with character. We've got to go back to people with character. And that's why I support the candidates that I support. I'll tell you right now, if you're a candidate and I'm not, and you're around and you're close to me and I'm not giving you any help, I'll tell you why. It's not that we disagree on the issues. It's that I don't see that character in you that makes you strong. That's why I support Connie Burton. Mm-hmm. That's why I support Sid Miller. That's why I support Dave Souza. That's why I support Rodney Lee Conover. That's why I support these guys. And you know what? I've had some candidates. I'm not going to mention a name, but I've had a candidate this last week that I found some stuff out about that I don't like the character and not getting any more of my support. Want him to win? Want him to win. But I'm not going to take my time and put my effort into it. Not going to do it anymore. Because I found out some character issues that I don't like. Mm-hmm. I've seen candidates who I loved them personally. I don't like their stand. I think they're waffly in their stand. I believe when they get to Washington, D.C., or when they get to the State House, or when they get to the governor's mansion, when it all comes down to it, the wolves are going to flow in and swoop down, and then they're going to turn around and play the same old games that Bob Corker in Tennessee has been playing. And that doesn't do me any good. I'm not going to worry about those kind of candidates. I'm not going to worry about those at all. I'm going to worry about the Dwayne Duvalls. I'm going to worry about the Greg Abbotts. I'm going to worry about those kinds of candidates that I have confidence in that they're not going to waver when they get into office. Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, folks, if they stand perfectly with you and you agree with them 100% on the issues. That's great. I love it. I love a good, solid conservative. But it doesn't matter if when they get there, they're going to make their decisions based on money. It doesn't matter if when they get there, they're going to make their decisions based on influence or personal gain. It's a sad situation. You know, we got Ann Lieber here in Texas. Wow, another powerhouse, Dan, where I'm going to be doing some stuff here more. I'm going to be paying more attention to her here close up because she's solid. She's solid in her core, and that's what it takes. Our founding fathers were solid in their core. They believed what they believed. They were willing to fight for it. Washington, D.C. was willing to fight for it. Jim Runnestead up in Michigan. Wow, what a great guy. Raised on a farm. He's a rancher. He's got that character that I like. He's going to do it. Ann Lieber, Justin Amash, I like him. We got some other great people. Carl Higbee, looking at him. I think there might be some growth that needs to be done there. Somebody that we've had on this show before, we've had on Tuesday nights, Gabby Saucedo Mercer. Man, powerhouse, absolute powerhouse. She stands for what she believes in. Dan, you've talked to her. We've had her on Tuesdays. In fact, I've interviewed her. I've had her on Blog Talk Radio 3 times. She's been a great one. Anytime I ask, come and talk on Blog Talk Radio, she's been great to come do that. Wayne Thomas up in Oregon, Team Kane state captain from Oregon, works on her campaign and works very closely with her and supports her. And, man, she's a powerhouse. She believes what she believes. And that's what this is all about. Because if we lose the basic fundamentals of this society, if we lose them, we're in trouble. On both sides of the aisle, and I wish I could say we had a whole bunch of Democrats listening to this, because I'd love to say the same thing to them. I don't have a problem with you supporting your Democratic candidate. I don't have a problem with you believing what you believe. But if you're going to get out there and support candidates, get out there and support candidates that you know are going to be the same people when they get into office as they are right now. Or else you're going to be in the same mess for what you believe in. If you want to push a certain ideology and you elect the wrong person, it's not going to help you either. That's why we've got the gridlock in the state houses. That's why we've got the gridlock in Washington, D.C. That's why nothing gets done. Because you've got a whole bunch of people that want to play the middle road, that want to play politics, and nothing gets done. The ball gets kind of swatted back and forth instead of real solutions being taken care of. Let's get some men and women on both sides of the aisle who are willing to sit down and hash out why they disagree, hash out what they believe, hash out what they agree on, and sit down and make some solutions. And then if you've got some good solutions, whether I agree with them or not, if you've got real good solutions, you vote on them. And then at least if it's a solution that I don't necessarily agree with, it is not a half-baked, falling apart, messed up, set up like Obamacare. So you guys wanted health care. So you wanted a health care set up. I didn't agree with that. But what did you end up with? You ended up with a mess. You guys on the other side of the aisle didn't end up with what you wanted. The voters didn't. I believe the politicians did. I believe they wanted it to be just like health, like the tax system, where you could tweak and play with it all you wanted. It was like a big toy at Christmas time. That's why it's so inept. But that's not what the people wanted. What did you guys vote for? You voted for these guys, and they put in your health care that you wanted, and they put it together. Nobody read the bill, and now we're in chaos. Well, if you guys on the other side of the aisle had stood up a long time ago and said, just because I agree with you on the issues doesn't mean I'm going to vote for you. I'm going to make sure you're not inept in the first place. Then maybe we still would have an Obamacare. But at least it wouldn't be falling apart at the seams. And I might not agree with it, and I might not agree with the way it was going, but at least it wouldn't be inept. We do that on both sides of the aisle, Dan, and it makes me crazy. The Republicans do the same thing. We come up with a great, brilliant idea. We're going to have a conservative solution to fixing something, and what do we end up with? We end up with a bunch of ineptness. We end up with a solution that was maybe good-hearted at the beginning, but it doesn't work because it's all messed up, because the lobbyists have written the bill and the legislators have never read the bill. I think that's insanity, folks. I think that's insanity. So we got to fight. We got to fight for what we believe in. We got to fight for good character in our candidates. Fight for that first. So you sit down, you go to the website, and you look at the candidate, and he agrees with you on everything except for one thing, and it happens to be your issue. Well, you know, you got to turn around sometimes and look and see if he's even going to have any influence on that issue. Abortion's that way. You know, we got a lot of candidates running around, and I, believe me, I was adopted in 1969. I was born in December of 1968. I was adopted in 1969. I could have been aborted, except for Roe v. Wade hadn't been passed yet, thank God. And I've got very, very strong beliefs about abortion. Very strong beliefs about abortion. But I also know that there's some candidates that aren't going to ever have any kind of influence on abortion, and it doesn't matter what they believe on it. And we'll squish a candidate because he makes the wrong statement that just doesn't come across on abortion just as strong as I believe in. And don't get me wrong, folks. I want candidates that are strong on abortion. I want candidates that are strong on abortion. I want candidates that are strong on abortion. But sometimes, boy, we got to use a little bit of common sense when we do this. You know, the only option we've got right now to do any kind of slowing down on abortion is starting to preach it in the churches. We got to start there. We want to go straight to the politics. We want to go straight to the governor's mansion. Well, the governor can't do anything to stop abortion. Can't do anything. There is nothing legally in this country he can do to stop abortion. The state houses, they can write legislation that limits and controls and discourages it, and I'm all for that. And the government can either sign or veto the bill. But he can't stop it. I'm a firm believer in legal immigration. Legal immigration. I get so angry, Dan, because the other side always wants to say you're against immigration. I saw an article yesterday about a woman that was talking about all the benefits of immigration. And there's great benefits of immigration. My family were immigrants. Dan, I would imagine your family was immigrants. Because every single, unless you're a Native American Indian, every single one of us descend from an immigrant. I firmly and wholeheartedly believe in immigration. I believe in the American dream. I spent time down in Grenada and Trinidad working a decade ago. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Some great people down there. Grenada was so friendly. Trinidad was a little bit dangerous. But I met so many good people, and every time I turned around, somebody was saying, I want to come to America. And I'm firmly a wholehearted believer. Yeah, let's bring them in, the poor, the tired, the hungry. Let's bring them in legally. Legally, not illegally. And don't continue to support America illegal immigration. Why? Because I believe we're a nation of laws. And because I know that, you know, I like to have people into my home. And I have at times in the past brought people in that were less fortunate and gave them a meal. I'm a firm believer in that. I'm a Christian. I've given my money away. I've done everything I could in my life to help those that were less fortunate. I'm a firm believer in that. Firm. But I don't want it to be legal for them to just walk in my house and open up my refrigerator and take what they want. Or to open up my front door and come in and sleep on my bed and say, well, I'm just here. Just accept me. But that's what the other side of the aisle wants to do. They just want, excuse me, they just want everybody to be able to come on in and enjoy the ride. Well, if you were at Disneyland and you jumped in the front of the line what would happen? They'd kick you out of the park. Yeah, we got people in foreign countries all over this world. There's what, Dan? I think about 180, 190 countries in this world. And there are people from every single one of those countries wanting in here. And they're all in line. They're all in line. And they're going through the process. They're trying to get in. And what slows down the process is we've got a bunch of people that have jumped the line. They've jumped the line. They've come in here. And, man, I know there's some that have come in here as kids, and they were 20 years ago. I understand that. I understand that. And I believe we've got to have some way to deal with that. I believe we do. One of the main things that I disagreed with Newt Gingrich about, and there's not much that I disagreed with Newt Gingrich. I was Newt before Kane. Kane caught my attention big time. And then afterwards, I was for Newt again, and I love Newt Gingrich. And I think he's an incredible story of looking at his past and going, that's not the way I should live. I think he's an incredible story of apologizing and saying, I blew it. But, man, during that debate, I wanted to smack him upside the head, Dan, when he come up with his immigration policy. Because we don't need to be worrying about the guys that have been here 20 years until we get that border closed up. That's the first thing we got to do. We got to stop everything coming in. And then start at the back. Start at the back. And, yeah, the 90-year-old little old lady that's been here for 40 years and lived like an American for 40 years as an illegal immigrant, and she's 90 years old, yeah, let's take and do something about that, okay? I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And let's work backwards. We spend so much time in this country, especially as conservatives, trying to wipe down the sink before we clean the dishes. And I believe that's what Newt's policy was wiping down the sink before we cleaned up the dishes. He wanted to start working with everybody that was in here and give his little card and his little thing. I totally disagreed with it. Because I think we need to start first at closing off that border. But because I think that we need to start first at closing off that border doesn't mean that I am uncompassionate. It doesn't mean that I don't like immigration. It doesn't mean that I'm mean and I'm racist. It just means I believe we need to fix the problem first. In fact, I'm very compassionate. I'll tell you what, my conversation when I sit down with somebody on a one-on-one basis, and it's this. Why in the world would you want to bring in another generation of people from across the border who in 20 years are still not going to be a part of the system? Why would you want to do that? Look at the people that are here that are not a part of the system. Some of them work real, real good jobs, $25, $30, $40 an hour jobs, but they're making 10 bucks because they're not a part of the system. Why would you want to bring a new crop in? Let's stop the insanity. Make them come through the border the correct way so that then when they come in here, they can live the American dream. Why would you want to continue to press those people into bondage by letting them just come across the border and just making everything okay? Because that's what you do with amnesty. What you do is if we just legalized everybody right now, then you'd have a whole new crop of people coming across. And in another 20 years, we'd be dealing with this same thing, and we'll have another generation of people that cannot participate adequately in the system and cannot reap the American dream. You can't reap the American dream as an illegal in this country. I want those people to be able to enjoy the American dream. But there's only a certain common sense, logical way to come to that conclusion. Only one way. And that's to do it legally. Do it legally. And quit letting these people jump across and get in front of the line. When there are people all over this world under worse conditions than what come across our southern border by a long shot who want to come here and flee prosecution, flee persecution. People in North Korea, wow, wouldn't we like to take a bunch of them in out of that bad situation? There's people in, I'll tell you, Trinidad. Boy, you leave the port of Spain, Trinidad, which is at the top northwest corner of the island. It's an island that's kind of shaped like Minnesota, actually. It's got a point at the top like Minnesota does, and up in that point is the Port of Spain. It's the capital.
And it's a great place. There's, you know, you've got 40% Africans, and you've got 40% East Indians, and the other 20% there in Trinidad is mixed, some Orientals, some whites, some Hispanics, a little bit of everybody. And it's a great little town. It's got some neat things to see and to do. It's got a great big, huge park, the great big savanna. You got to get anywhere in the Port of Spain almost. You got to, along that side of the town, you got to drive all the way around that park. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But you leave south from the Port of Spain. You head south down the island. And you pass through, and I've mentioned this before on this show, Dan, you pass through, the only way I can describe it, is a rotten diaper crossed with a turkey farm. I have never smelled anything as horrendous in my entire life. And you drive through that for about 4 or 5 miles before you leave that smell. And while you're driving through there, there are rows and rows and rows of these little neighborhoods with little houses that are made out of aluminum siding, plywood, and cardboard. Mile after mile after mile of poverty like our homeless don't even see in this country. You know, you want to be homeless, go to Santa Monica. Live down there next to the Santa Monica Pier. I guarantee you, it's like living in a mansion being homeless in Santa Monica than it is to be having a home in some parts in Trinidad. I feel compassionate for those people. Although I will say this, on the other side of that, those people are still content. Because that's another one of our problems. You know, we're dealing with this Justin Bieber thing right now. You know, he's just a spoiled brat when it all comes down to it. People in foreign countries that don't have a whole lot, we find a whole lot more contentment. I've been into the South. I've been deep into Mexico. I've been to Guaymas. I've been to St. Louis, and I've seen poverty down there, and I've sat in the homes and visited with people that have dirt floors and no windows. They've just got holes in the side of their wall for windows. And I've sat and visited with them, but you know what? They're not spoiled, and they're content, and they're happy with what they've got. And that's not to say I wouldn't love to see them have a better living standard. I would love to see that. But they beat us big time in contentment. Sometimes we got so much stuff in this country. We're so spoiled rotten in everything that we do. Well, I know I am to a certain extent. Let me tell you, for 2 weeks I didn't have internet access. And I thought I was going to pull my hair out. I was doing everything on my phone, and we were using cell usage, $20 every 2 to 3 days. We were racking up, about $150 the first couple of weeks we were here in cell phone usage, in the cell data. Spoiled a little bit. Didn't have my internet. My sister's going right down right today that we've got a big screen TV coming, Dan, 72 inches.
Jeez.
And I love it. We're going to be able to watch some big TV. It's a great way to watch movies. I love it that we live in a society where we can have that, but we're spoiled rotten. We think we got to have all those things, and there's nothing wrong with having them. As long as we keep them into perspective. As long as we keep it into perspective. I got my computer sitting out here in Studio Mesquite, Continuing for Truth Radio, Studio Mesquite, set up on a piece of furniture my grandfather made for his kitchen. It was, as a child, it was their kitchen, one of their kitchen cabinets. It's about, 4 foot tall, maybe 3 foot tall, and he made it. And I got my studio set up here with my laptop and my second monitor and my speakers and my light and got all my pens and my paper out here for taking notes. And I look around. I got the keyboard that I use for homeschool. I generally start the day out with doing a little bit on the keyboard for some music, and haven't even got that put in the house yet. Haven't found a place to put it yet. But you know, I got the keyboard. I got so many things. I got Oliver Twist here on a DVD, Dan, the old original Oliver Twist with Jackie Moore. Not even out of the package. I've had this thing for maybe 5 years. I only paid a dollar for it at the dollar store, but I never even opened up, you know. And I took it all the way from California to Texas, and I look around at the boxes. You know, I'm in the garage, so we've got boxes that we still haven't unpacked and different things. We got Shorty, my brother-in-law, is as tall as I am. It's an air compressor. 7 horsepower, 60 gallons. It's wonderful. You don't have to go down to the gas station in order to air up your tires. It's wonderful. Count our many blessings. That's what I'm doing. Count our many blessings. You know, there are people in the world that would look at this thing and go, what in the world? There are little communities in the world that maybe have one of these in the whole community that everybody shares. You know, even in Springville, most people didn't have a big old air compressor. You still got to go down to Giffords to air your tires up. We're spoiled, folks. And these things are great. I love blessings, and I love the way we live, and I love the things that we have. We've got a blower to blow the leaves. We've got a lawnmower. You know, when in your day and age, Dan, the lawnmowers, they didn't turn on, did they? When you were a little kid, you had to push them and give them a lot of power. We come a long way. This thing's got a button on it, and you go, and it just starts up, and you just push it. We're spoiled. Count our many blessings. Count our many blessings. We got all kinds of things. You know, walk through the house. I got another computer in the house sitting by my bed with a big screen monitor on it. And I got my Netflix. We've got Time Warner. I haven't had cable or satellite here for a couple of years. We've been doing only on Netflix, but we decided to go ahead and get Time Warner. And now I can get Time Warner. I can watch TV. I can watch Fox News on my phone and on my computer. I can watch whatever I can put on the television, I can put on my computer or my phone. So we got the big screen TV where it's going to sit. And next to that, over where my computer is set up, I've got my little monitor. So when the kids are watching TV, whatever, I can watch on my phone. I could go down to the park down here and watch on my phone, watch television. We're spoiled, folks. Spoiled. And I say that because, man, we need to count our blessings. We need to appreciate what we've got, not depreciate it. Not depreciate it. Because there's a lot of people in this world that don't have anything. And the problem is that the basic character lesson that we learn from that is most of the time throughout the history of man, when man gets really, really comfortable is when he starts to fall apart. That's the history of the Old Testament. That's the history of the Judges. When things were going good, they tended to forget God and just kind of live however they wanted to live, and then pretty soon they fell into bondage. The Midianites or the Philistines pulled them into bondage. The Midianites were awful. It took right at spring when everything was just starting to grow and wiped out all their crops, killed all their new cattle, killed all the baby cattle and put them into severe poverty. And that's the pattern. So what do we do about that in this great country? We look around and we see all the wonderful things we got. And if we get too comfortable, what do we do? Well, that's where the show started, Dan. That's where you started us out with. When we get too comfortable, we don't pay attention to the politicians. We don't get out and fight the fight. We just figure somebody else is going to do it. We want to sit in our houses, and we want to watch our TVs, and we want to listen to our radios, and we want to play on our computers, and we want to play games on Facebook when we've got people out there that are wanting to destroy this nation. When they want change, fundamental change. They want to take over our schools. They want to take over our children. Right now, it's gotten big. Rush Limbaugh brought this up a couple of years ago, but right now it's getting really big. The schools are now, the left is wanting to start feeding the kids dinner. You know, school lunch, that's kind of almost a necessity. You got to have lunch during the middle of the day. But pretty soon the schools started providing the lunch, and there was a big push to try and provide. It never happened, but to try and provide lunch for every kid. Now a lot of the schools are telling parents what they can't send in their lunches. And then they started adding breakfast. When we got here, my middle niece, who went to school, they kept trying to usher her in to give her breakfast. Well, we give her breakfast here at home. That's okay. And now they're trying to do it with dinner. Feed our kids three times a day and take the total responsibility out of the parents. And why does it go on? Why does it happen? How does it get that far? Because we're so comfortable living in the lifestyle which we've got, this wonderful lifestyle, that we think everything's just going to be that way the rest of our lives. We think through history, we've made it to this point, it's just always going to be the same. Well, it won't, folks.
There are always forces fighting against it. There are always forces fighting for oppression. There are always forces fighting for bondage. And if we don't continue that fight, if we don't get out and support our candidates, if we don't get out and support our Sid Millers, our Dave Souzas, our Rodney Conovers, if we just spend our time watching our televisions, playing our Facebook, and don't pay attention to what's going on, we're going to be in trouble. If we don't get out there and get other people to pay attention to what's going on, we're going to be in a mess. That's why we fight, isn't it, Dan? I'll pass it back to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. It's our complacency that has gotten us into this problem that we're in right now, is that we haven't gone out there and we haven't been keeping track of our candidates on both sides. And what happened is over the years, one side kept on going farther to the left and the other side kept on going farther to the right, and we lost the debating process. And debating is healthy. You see, because through debating, both sides have to compromise to some degree, and we come up with the correct answer. And you see, this is something that if you listen, have been listening to Congress lately, you haven't heard that. You haven't heard both sides sitting down and debating issues out. You hear one side saying it's this way, and the other side saying it's this way. And there's no give and take on either side. And what's the result? We aren't getting anything done. You know, it's been going on for the last almost 7 years, and nothing's getting done. Nobody is standing up for what they believe in. No one is standing up for what their constituents are saying. There are a few good politicians on both sides, but the vast majority are just sitting there going, yep. And what they do is they go with whatever the majority, you know, wherever the tide's going. And look at what's happening. What's happening right now is we are losing our constitutional rights. We are losing our fundamental beliefs. And we have lost our way as a nation. This is why I say that on both sides, we got to return to the fundamentals. And the fundamentals are God, Constitution, and country. Real simple. And we got to remember that each state has its own sovereignty, it's its own entity within itself, and that the vast majority of the laws should be held by the states. Every time we run into a problem, we run to the federal government. And that's not the solution. That's not the way this country was designed. It wasn't the way this country was meant to be led. The federal government was actually supposed to be a very, very small entity. And we have turned it into a giant monster. I have started last week a look at all the departments in the federal government. I haven't gotten up to see, and there's over 100 departments I've seen. And each department, you know, has many, many, many people that are employed. And this is where we are being required to pay exuberant taxes. And this is something that needs to be changed. How are we going to change it we got to go back to our fundamentals. And once we get back to our fundamentals and we get back to what our forefathers have seen, then we can start taking apart this conglomerate, this mess that we've created in Washington, and start the downsizing process, which is going to be consisting of, you know, each department has a pretty good, you know, its fundamental reason is good. But what happens is by declaring different departments, each one becomes a entity within itself, and each one becomes power hungry. And again, you don't get things done. So what we need to do is consolidate departments. And it will not only downsize the government, it'll make it more efficient. And if we take the some of the basic economic principles that were used in the growth of this country, take AT&T, for instance. Everybody complained on how big the company was, but what it did is it broke the company down into three basic units that all work very efficiently together. And whether we like to admit it or not, back in the late 70s and the early 80s, we had one of the greatest phone systems in the world. Why? Because we had, it was run as a business. And people sat down and they thought of, how do we make this efficient? And we need to do that. We need to bring that back to our country. You see, by downsizing, you can make them more efficient and you can reduce your cost. The left doesn't want to hear that. They want to keep on going with they believe in the bigger, the better. And that's not necessarily the truth. You see, sometimes being smaller and more efficient is the way to go. And this is what, see, our forefathers understood that. And that's why they wanted the majority of power to be distributed amongst the colonies or individual states. And see, that one also prevented one particular state or the federal government to gain too much power. And that's one of our biggest problems today, is the federal government has too much power. So when I keep on saying, you know, you and I keep on talking about the past, well, that's the whole idea, is to bring things back to where it belongs. Give these states the power. Do not ask the federal government to solve all our problems. Because when we start doing that, we consolidate all the power to one area. What happens when you then give them ultimate power breeds into ultimate corruption. And that's what we're running into today. So we need the grassroots movement to bring back the power to the state. And as these people go into the federal government, they have that ideal set in their mind. And this is, again, why I want to reduce the, this is why I fight so much for limited terms, even on the federal level. with the Senate and the House, because what happens is you gain a individual who's been in whatever the House or the Senate, and they create these little power groups, and then all of a sudden they can control the smaller groups, the people, the newcomers. And either you join in with one party or the other, or they destroy you. Newt Gingrich, who you had mentioned and how much you respected him, Newt Gingrich was a prime example. Newt, at the end of his career, was probably one of the most powerful people in politics. And what happened is Newt believed in a lot of the fundamental conservative beliefs that our forefathers did. And those who wishing to go for the big government and ultimate power chose to take him down. Bob Dole and Nancy Pelosi were the two people behind this whole sinister program, because I know they had to have both sides in on this to take them out. And that's what they did. And to this day, Newt is being plagued by incidents that that never happened 20 years ago. And this is, see, this is where we need the changes. This is why we need the two-year programs instead of a person being allowed to stay in and create a little power group. And Dole and Pelosi had done that. And these are, I mean, Pelosi still has her little power thing going right now. And she's making a push right now. She wants control over the House. And her little group is going to turn around. They're going to lie, cheat, and steal to make sure that happens. And this is what the only thing I'm concerned with this coming election, is that the lying and the cheating are going to get us into trouble. That's why I'm thinking more of the old-fashioned paper ballots, because it's more difficult to cheat. Computers today can change things very, very easily. And what, as a nation, what we need, if we want, you know, if I talk to people, a lot of people all the time, and most everybody wants the same thing. You know, they're disgusted with Congress right now for cutting the benefits of our vets, and especially our disabled vets, and yet they give themselves a raise. Now, that's disgusting. And yet, what happens? Our congressmen turn around and say, blah, blah, blah. And nothing, you know, nothing gets done. They give us a line of baloney. Why? Because we have a nation filled with politicians. And we have a nation filled with a lack of patriots. You see, what I call a patriot is a person who truly believes with all their heart in what our founding fathers said and the ideals they placed. because what you know, these people sat down in the summer of 1787, and they came up with one of the most brilliant documents in the history of mankind. And no, did they agree on everything? No. For instance, when they put in the slavery clause, I mean, the North knew it was going to come to a head. And they basically knew that the Civil War was going to happen because it was just a matter of time. But they knew that before they could, that step was going to happen, they knew that they had to create a strong bond as a union. And when President Lincoln came in, his first plan was preservation of the Union. And it was that, after the Civil War, that we actually grew stronger as a nation. Because that was the first time we were truly a United States, both North and South. The South may not have liked losing, and we treated them terribly, but we became a single entity with one governing body. And the problem was, is that in about 100 years ago, the progressive movement began, and the states started losing their rights. And it wasn't that the union, the strength of the union wasn't there. It was a power struggle that began between the union and the federal government. And little by little, the federal government gained control. FDR was the next major step, and it continued on. But even back in the day, you know, the FDR days, World War II, and coming out of Truman days, we came back to another president, John F. Kennedy, who was definitely a Democrat. But he held with the basic principles of this nation. He said that the nation wasn't supposed to take care of the people. It was the people who were supposed to keep the nation going. And one of his favorite, famous quotes is, "Ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country." And see, that basic foundation right there was saying that it's up to the individual, not the federal government. It was the individual who kept this country going. And it was what this country was meant to be. And if we don't get back to that, if we don't turn around and say that the federal government has become way too powerful. And I think we're getting to that point now, is that both sides are realizing that we are losing our constitutional rights. I mean, take a look at our First Amendment. Our First Amendment is being attacked from six ways from Sunday, from not having truly the right to peaceful assembly, but it depends on what you're assembling for. If you are for the far left, you're allowed to get together and say pretty much whatever you want. If you are on the far right, you aren't allowed to say anything. So right now, we are losing our First Amendment rights. When we look at the church, back in the when we were growing up, I talked about Christmas before, how Christmas became more than just a Christian holiday. It became a federal holiday. And it was a period of time when, during the 60s, when it was goodwill to all mankind. It wasn't just a Christian holiday. It grew past that. And it was a time when everybody came together. And we could unite as a nation. And then we turned around and we had the 4th of July again. Another time where we could unite as a nation and remember our forefathers. I mean, back in the old days, we used to sing the Yankee Doodle Dandy, God Bless America, Stars and Stripes Forever, and, you know, all the songs that brought us together as a nation. And we've lost all those. And we're no longer a united nation. We are fragmented, and it's intentionally being done at the top levels, where we're bringing back problems we had figured out back in the early 60s, and they're bringing them back up. They're trying to create a socioeconomic divide. They're trying to bring up a racial divide. You were talking earlier about immigration. Well, if you looked at my relatives came over here in the early part, right around 1900, and all of them funneled through Ellis Island and had to go through the rigmarole of becoming a U.S. citizen. And part of that was you had to take a course, and you had to pledge, you had to say that I am no longer a member of whatever country I am, but I pledge my allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and I give up everything from my previous nation. And see, they came in, and when they finally settled, yeah, they may have settled in their little, you know, Italian portion of New York City, and the German and the French, but they were Americans, and they knew how special it was, how when they saw the Stars and Stripes fly above them, how proud they were to be here in the United States as an American citizen. And you see, this is where we lost it. Then, you know, now we have open borders. We have people coming and going, and the first thing we need to do, as I said, is to close the border. Why do I say that? You and I were both agreeing on this, but how do you save a ship filled with people until you fix the hole? And the hole is the open border. So we patch the hole, And once the hole is patched, then we can say that the person has been here for the last 80 years and has lived up to the rules, the laws of this country. Well, yeah, I have no problems with making them citizens. The people who have been productive human beings in our country, I have no problems with them. You know, the children that were born over here, I have no problems with that either. But the person who comes in here to be an immigrant just to make money to send back to their home country and then go back, no, I have no, that's not being an American. You've never pledged your allegiance. You know, there was a video once of a Spanish bar on the border, and they flew the Spanish flag, the Mexican flag, above Old Glory. And to me, that's the biggest insult they could have ever made, because nothing flies in this nation above our stars and stripes. You see, they don't understand that. They don't understand what it is to be an American. You see, we have a pride. We have to be an American is much more than just living in this country. I mean, if you look back at our history and what we have done, you know, even in our world wars, or, you know, World War II, for instance, you know, we had men who were willing to die, I mean, and did without hesitation, and to preserve our way of life. It wasn't a political game. It was get the damn job done. And we had a rule amongst our soldiers that no soldier be left behind. Why was that? It's because they were Americans. And they deserved that respect for laying down their lives. They deserved the respect. Because we knew that this road to freedom has been paved by the blood of patriots. And in the Civil War, 500,000 people died. 51,000 at Gettysburg. But when it came down to burying the dead, it didn't matter if they had a gray jacket on or a blue jacket. They were Americans. And see, the immigrants today, the ones who come in here illegally, don't understand that. They don't understand the sacrifices made by our forefathers to get us to this position now. You see, our forefathers, I said this before, our forefathers literally gave everything for the formation of this nation. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I like the Red Skelton skit, is that he says, I pledge allegiance, and it meant I pledge everything. I pledge everything I own. I pledge my life. There is nothing that comes above my country other than God. And see, the immigrants today and the far left don't understand that. and they see this as almost a free ride where everybody can get whatever, and they don't realize the ramifications. You see, we need to turn that around. You know, the Navy SEALs, for instance, all the special forces today have pledged their allegiance to the right side. Why? It's because they understand what it's like to put your life down for your country. And they understand what it means to offer everything you own, everything you have, to the sanctity of this nation. I keep on talking about a book called Boyd, and I still wish everybody would read that. Not many people haven't gotten much feedback on it. But it's a person who was a perfect American. He was another Frederick Douglass. See, this man went through the service, but he fought for what he believed in. Not only what the politicians and those above him said, but he fought for what he believed in. And as he grew in political ranks, in his ranks in the military, the colonel, where this is where those in the military make the decision, are you going to be a politician or are you going to be a career military? And he chose career military. And he came up with ideas. Modern warfare today is all based on him. He found a way of saving money in the Pentagon. And the F-16 project is all of his. You see, Boyd understood what it was to be a true patriot. And when he was retired from the military, oftentimes the military go right to work for somebody like Lockheed or Boeing or all these major military contractors who pay him big bucks to sell their products. Boyd did not want to be controlled by any of these major corporations. So he went to work for the federal government for $1 a year. He was so poor, he had to live in a trailer. Him and his wife never owned a home. Yet he turned around and changed the way the Pentagon works. If you ever want to see a movie about Boyd, is called Pentagon Wars with Kelsey Grammer. And the colonel who they mention in the movie is one of Boyd's proteges. And it was over the Bradley fighting vehicle. And Boyd gave his entire life, his entire career, when he had easy access to being very wealthy. He chose against that because he wanted to do what was best for the nation. And the reason the Bradley fighting vehicle became something that was truly to protect those inside is because of him. So I recommend that book, Boyd, to everybody. And he is also the epitome of the true patriot. And you see, I grew up, I respected these people. You know, I looked at what our forefathers did. And growing up in New England, you know, right in the heart of where our country was born, I heard stories of what the sacrifices were made for our nation. And you see, what we need to do is we need to revamp our immigration laws, close down our borders to anybody who wants to come in and out and blow up our country. This president here, because of his religious beliefs, wants to leave open doors so that people can kill our citizens. And it's, you know, it's terrible, but this is the truth. I mean, we have more than enough evidence that he has, he was raised under the Muslim belief. And these are people we've been battling with since the very early days of this nation, since the Barbary Wars. And we go that way, you continue that on. In 1705, you know, Jefferson tried to reach out a hand to say, you know, this is, you know, let's stop this. And they immediately broke that law, that treaty. And we've been at war with these people for 200 years. And there's a time when you look at it and you have to say that this is no longer a religion, this is a terrorist organization. And, you know, if the Muslims truly were against terrorism, they'd be doing more to stop it. Instead, a lot of the money that goes to the Muslim Brotherhood goes through the mosque. And we got to make a hard decision on the First Amendment. Where do you draw the line between being a religious group or a terrorist group? And I think we've already made that decision. So we need to start taking some fundamental looks there. And we also need to return back where both sides of the aisle start voting more moderate. I believe in, as much as you do, in being conservative. Scott, you know me better than almost anybody. And you know how conservative I am. And I do have my beliefs on abortion. I do have my beliefs on gay marriage. But you know something? I don't believe that these are laws that need to be made on a federal basis. You see, each state should have that choice. And what will happen, the biggest problem we're dealing with today is a lack of morality. And when did that begin? It's when we started taking God out of the picture. You know, the lack of morality began in the early 60s. And it just kept on progressing and progressing to the point where it is today. And when you take away the moral fiber of the people, you see, they don't see any consequences for their actions. And therefore, they can go out and murder somebody, and the only consequence they see is getting locked up in jail. They don't see the overall consequences. And you see, once you lose that, then it's a toss of the dice. Well, I might get away with it, I might not. And they do the same thing with robbing, divorce, every aspect of our lives. You see, they don't see the overall consequences. You see, if you believe in God, you believe that there's going to be consequences beyond life on this earth. And therefore, you're going to have more likelihood of having moral fiber, where you believe in the family structure, you believe you're raised under the family structure that today we don't have. And why don't we have it? Both parents have to go out and work. Why is that? Because taxes have gotten out of control. And why did our forefathers break away from Britain? Taxation without representation. And we're running into the exact same problem. See, we've come full circle, and we're right back to where we started. And now it's time to stand up and set the record straight. And through that, we can once again return our nation to a point where we can live on one family member's income and keep the other parent home teaching the moral rules of society. And then you're going to solve your problems with murder and stealing and, you know, all the other problems we're having, because you'll be taught the Ten Commandments. And then if we can get the clergy more involved. You see, the clergy has become just as much of a problem as the government. They've become lackadaisical. They have not gone out into the community to bring people back to the church. And these are things that we need to do, because once we return that, all of a sudden the problems like abortion, gay marriage, and on begin to solve themselves. Because once they are not accepted by society, then society will make the change. And this is why I fight for our return to the basics. We need to turn around and say, no, this is wrong. Why? It's morally wrong. And we need more than a few of us saying that. We need a lot of us saying that. How do you do that? You get people to go back to church and begin to start learning what the teachings of Moses, Abraham, Jesus Christ, and learn from the teaching of our religious founders. And then all of a sudden, once you start doing that, then we can start taking steps to change the other aspects. Yeah, I mean, I believe firmly that our problems today are 50% government and 50% religious. And with the, you know, the federal basis, I'm going to sit down there and finish going through how many thousands of departments we have and then start breaking them down to see how many we could actually cut but I would bet dollars to donuts we could cut probably at least 200 to 300 departments. That would save this country millions upon millions of dollars. And you see, we need to start by looking at the problems, assessing these problems, and then we can find solutions. We don't do that. We just add more and more laws, and even when we get a conservative in the office, they aren't addressing the original problems. And the problem is we've created a monster. And we have to break that down and get that under control. And we do that by, first of all, sitting down and taking a real hard look at these thousands of departments and these hundreds of thousands of people our federal government employ. And I say, get rid of these jobs. And, you know, the opposition goes, well, they won't have a job. Yes, they will, because a lot of people, you know, a lot of these departments we can outsource into the private sector. And then the private sector can take care of it. And we don't have to pay it through our tax dollars. And these, you know, these are basic, I'm no rocket scientist, but these are basic principles of economics and basic principles to keep the downside of the government. And we have to sit down there and take a real hard look at these things and say enough is enough, and this is what we need to do. And I'm taking it upon myself to start digging through all this mess just so I can show how it can be done. Because as I said, as I'm going through this, it is like a disaster. And we need to look at it from multiple aspects. We can't look at it from one section. And the problem is with the Conservative Party right now is that we look at things from like, oh, the abortion issue, oh, the gay marriage, or, oh, we don't like this. And we become so tunnel visioned that we lose sight of what is the end objective. And the end objective is to downsize the federal government, God, country, Constitution. And once we solve these three problems, then we can go after the rest, and then we can finally get back to where we need to be. But we need people that are going to be brave enough and strong enough to stand up and say, we can get rid of these 15 departments and we can consolidate them as one. And we need to overcome these lobbyists, and we need to overcome these unions that are preventing all this from happening. And we need a strong president with a strong cabinet. And we need our representatives to be strong, to be stand up for what they believe and what their constituents want. And when they do come up and they are debating, they need to go back to their constituents and say, here is what we came up as a compromise. Do we agree with this as a people? And then it's yay or nay. And then they go back and they can present their final conclusion. this is the way this country was designed to be run. And this is what we need to return to. This is our fundamental values. And we also need to turn around and say, no, government cannot tell you that you can't put a nativity scene up at Christmas, or you can't put religious symbology symbols in the middle of the desert. That's not the idea of the First Amendment. That's not an idea between the idea of separation between church and state. If we have any questions, we go back to the Federalist Papers or the original author of that particular thing. And this is what will make our country back to where it should be, the greatest country on earth. It still is, but we need to return to our basics if we want to maintain this position. And back to you on that.
Well, and Dan, you really did say a mouthful, and it is all true. You know, this country was founded on some basic principle, and the only way to bring a country back into bondage is to get rid of those basic principles. And those basic principles come from my creator. We could go on for this for hours on how this all works together. But when you purposefully want to tear apart the family unit, there are for a lot of reasons. Because you can have better control over the minds of the kids that way. But, you know, like you said, when we push to a position where the mom had to work, and we used to be in a position where families could live on one income, and the dad could go to work, and the mom could stay home if she wanted to and be a homemaker. And we had the Equal Rights Movement, which, just like Obamacare, just like with Common Core, didn't state the real problem and didn't try and solve the real problem. The goal was really to make all women work so that they're not home with the family. And so now we live in a two-income world where the moms can't stay home and work if they want. They've lost the right, for the most part, to stay home and work because families have a hard time making it on just one income. But when we go back to where when the dad went to work and the mom stayed home and raised the kids and she was there in charge of what was going on and going into their minds, going into their hearts, there was a better responsible looking at what was going on in the school and what was being taught in the school. The parents showed up. A lot of this nonsense that goes on now couldn't be getting away with. But there's purposefulness in it because they do. That set of politics does want to take away the basic principles that come from God. And let me tell you, it's a situation where the world's always done this. We're not any different today than the world has been at different times. That's always been the concept. We can go back to World War II and find Hitler wanting to burn Bibles. And we can go back and we can find at different times in our history where God was purposely taken out. But we got to put it back in. And we've gone past the top of the hour, Dan, and we've had a great show. I'm going to go ahead and get us signed off. We've actually gone for 2.5 hours, and we're going to it's been a great show. You've had some great things to say, Dan, excellent things, in fact, because this is what we fight for. This is what we really, really fight for. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've listened to this far in, we want to remind you that Dan and I do this every Saturday. Again, next Saturday we'll be at the Tarrant County Candidates Forum over in Tarrant County, just a hop, skip, and a jump away from me over in the part of the country, a part of Dallas country that Michael Smith from CNR Radio, where he lives, and there's going to be some great candidates. I'll be broadcasting live from there next Saturday morning at same time, 10 o'clock Texas time, 11 o'clock Florida time. We've got this next Tuesday night on Parental Sovereignty Radio, we've got Dara Bailey with iCaucus coming on, a great organization doing a lot of great things, and we're going to talk to her about iCaucus. And then, of course, next Saturday, Sid Miller will be the main guest. Who knows, Dan, who I might run into while we're talking over there, walking around, who might get an opportunity to speak up. Let me tell you, I know that Ted Cruz will be there. I know that there's going to be a lot of great candidates there and great politicians that are going to be there and some great people. Maybe run into Toby Marie Walker with Waco Tea Party. She's been working hard on this IRS thing. She was one of those that ended up on the brunt end of the stick with that. Whitney Neal with Freedom Works, one of my favorite girls, I'm going to tell you. Talk about working hard. Whitney Neal, I'm not sure if she'll be in D.C. that weekend or if she'll be down here, but I'm sure if she's down here, she'll be over there. And many other patriots that are working hard to fight this fight. Looking forward to seeing them over there. It is going to be, talk about being right in the middle of the goulash, Dan. I'm going to be right in the middle of the goulash, and it's going to be fun. Texas politics, loving it. Proud Texan here. Didn't take me very long to become a proud Texan. California, where is that place? I don't know. It's over there to the west somewhere, and whatever they're doing, they're doing. But we do want to keep in mind Rodney Conover is over there working hard, every day working hard to win this election. And of course, our co-host on Tuesdays, Rodney Stanhope, over there working hard too. Rodney Stanhope is actually down this week in Alabama 7, working with Matt Jenkins, who's running for Congress in Alabama 7. We've had him on this show before. In fact, we had him Tuesday night. He called in the third hour, Dan. I had some conversation with him. So I want to thank you, Dan. We had some great discussion today, some great thoughts. You know, history, folks, you got to learn from your history. You got to go back and look back in history. And biblical principles, basic godly principles, so important. The family unit, so important. All these things. So with that, with no further ado, we are going to send out like we often do. With a very, very special man to me, and as I know a very special man to you, D-Rock Country. D-Rock writes some of the best lyrics, as far as I'm concerned, that have been written in a long, long time. Patriotic lyrics, lyrics about God and country and women patriots, and this song is my all-time favorite song, Keep On Keeping On, because it's about what we do. This has been Contending for Truth Radio, and we're going to sign off with this.
Just go wrong, make you wanna holler and shout and throw your hands up in the air wondering what it's all about. And you think that things can get much worse in a second. Oh, everything just goes south. Keep on keeping on. Whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. Take it one day at a time. God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. Before the dawn.
one day at a time. With God's grace, you're gonna be fine. You got what it takes down inside. The road ain't long. Keep on keeping on. Keeping on, whatever don't kill you makes you strong. Don't you worry, it won't be long. Darkness comes before the dawn. I'll give you one better time. With God's grace, you're gonna.